Welcome to Dirty Secrets of Small Business. This show's mission is to give you the knowledge, tools, and power to achieve success, whether you're starting a small business or already have one. I'm Jack Mancini, and I'm here with my business partner, Adam Sunhalder.
Each week, we'll be talking business, small business, drawing on our collective experience having owned and operated 20 small companies and coached and advised hundreds more. Dirty Secrets of Small Business will debunk the common myths of business ownership, expose the impact of government regulation, share small business success stories, and reveal the dirty secrets of small business.
Our show is brought to you by Maximum Value Partners, MVP. We do the heavy lifting of analyzing your business with you to identify what's working or not working, and then coach you to implement and engage the right resources to help your small business thrive. Along the way, we're your partners. You will be doing the work, and we will be there 24/7 to coach you and chart your path to success.
Give us a call at 877-849-0670. That's 877-849-0670. Or better yet, visit us at MaximumVP.com.
In today's show, we're going to be focusing on primarily four things. First one is common myths of small business ownership, dirty secret of the week, a how come section in which we're just going to sort of ponder the world here, and it'll probably be me, at least for the right now today. Anyway, what's on my mind? How come? I'll start the question with how come. And then the small business success stories from our clients. We're business coaches, and we have hundreds of clients, many, many stories to tell, successful clients who are doing very well today. We'll also touch on current events, regulations impacting small business, and hopefully, I think, sprinkled throughout unpolitically correct discussion.
And we invite you to call with any questions. Now, don't be shy or embarrassed. The question you ask is probably the same one that others are afraid to ask. So call us here at 440-946-9468. That's 440-946-WINT. So as Jack laid out, our first segment today is going to be a common myth. And this is the point of the show where we debunk a common myth. And so our common myth this week is one that we hear a lot about, and I'm guessing those of you out here in our listening audience have heard about it as well. And that myth is that there is a lot of risk associated with small business ownership. Now, that seems kind of crazy to us, and we started looking at some different things, but one being the actual definition of risk, which to me talks about things that involve danger, which is interesting. But let me get to one thing I did first, Jack, which was I did a little Google search on this.
You're good at that, Adam. I want to compliment you on your Google searching.
Google's a wonderful tool, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so what I did is I wanted to look, and I did it on two phrases, very simple phrases. The first one being risks of owning a business, and the second one, rewards of owning a business. Now, would you have any guess how many hits I got from my Google search here on the risks part of it?
Well, given the proclivity of most people here, I'm going to say a million?
Almost. Actually, it was 26 million.
Oh, my God.
Now, the flip of that, doing the rewards of owning a business, would you know I barely got half a million? So 26 million versus half a million. That's more than 50-to-1 ratio, right?
What's that say? What does that tell you?
Well, there's certainly a lot of people that are talking about how risky it is to own your own business. And so I can see why people maybe talk about the fact that, hey, most of these entrepreneurs are very swashbuckling and they're out doing their thing and they're very, very high risk takers versus folks who have jobs.
Well, you know, that comes about the people writing about it usually aren't small business owners. They're small business journalists. So most people haven't sat in the shoes of the small business owner. You know, good business owners don't take unnecessary risks. And what do I mean by that? Well, I think the riskiness, it's like you say, Adam, it's romantic, it's fun, it's great to write about, it's a good mystery story. But good business owners don't run that way. They have knowledge of business. They have the ability to plan and execute those plans and hold the discipline so that they don't make big mistakes. big mistakes come from people who don't know what they're doing. It's kind of simple, isn't it?
Well, so wait a minute. So I guess what we're saying is, as opposed to being high risk and swashbuckling and everything else, that maybe owning a business could be a little boring at times?
Oh, my God, yeah. A successful business can be very boring. You got to make your own excitement here. Just performing according to a plan, it really does get boring, no matter how swashbuckling, as you say, the plan is.
Right, so to have success, it's not as what people think. It's just lucky timing, or something happens, or that these people have a penchant for risk, where they, you know, if they look at their lives, everything that they're doing is risky. Because I agree, we don't view our clients that we have and have had in the past, or other small business owners that we meet, as being risk takers, nor do they necessarily describe themselves that way.
That's right. That's not what the small business owner does. You know, you gave a little definition of risk. Risk really boils down to dealing with uncertainty. We all deal with uncertainty. We don't know what's going to come around the corner at any given time, at any given day. But when you're running a small business, you can plan quite a few of those variables that hit the business. And it's amazing. You know, we as business coaches, we've created 7 keys to success. And what that does is encompass all the necessary points that, if mastered, would lead to success in your business. And we define success as sustainable growing profits. So somebody, first of all, has to be coachable. And if they're coachable, they're going to get to where they want to go. But people who basically do take risks in a big way, it's that uncertainty that they're sort of throwing caution to the wind. They aren't planning well. They don't know how to plan well. Let me give you a couple of fatal mistakes of companies that have gone literally out of business for not understanding how to basically run these seven keys to success. So a company runs out of cash. Adam, how does that happen? How do you run out of cash?
You hear that a lot. Hey, all I need is more cash. And we'll often talk about and do the hypothetical, right? Which is, well, let's picture $1 million dropping here on the table. And what are you going to do with it? I mean, you know, if you have cash, it's easy to spend it. It's a matter of what the plan is in order to help make the company more successful.
So your plan has to basically put cash first. And if you start to run out of cash, you better have a plan for offsetting that. And it's not as difficult as you may think if you understand business. Another fatal mistake, not paying taxes. For all the big people that you want to be messing around with in this world, the government isn't one of them. They have tremendous power to shut you down, as you've heard stories, and many of those stories are true.
Well, there's all kinds of taxes to pay, too. People think about it, I think, mostly personal income taxes, probably. But you're talking about things like payroll taxes and the variety of alphabet soup you often will see on your paycheck. Those are all taxes that not only that you as an employee would pay, but also that the company does matching for. I think most people are not aware of that. You touched earlier about people, you know, not being risky if they know what they're doing in terms of business, or if they understand business. Well, that may be one of the biggest issues we talked about before, which is, you know, job versus entrepreneur mentality. I think most folks have training and have the mentality of having that job mentality. You know, the idea of being an entrepreneur or business owner and what to do in order to run a business, that's not necessarily being taught anywhere. So I can see why people may think that, hey, it's pretty risky. I think your point is that to debunk this, hey, if you know what you're doing, and you understand how business works and the facets of it, you know, as it relates to our 7 keys, all of a sudden things become much less risky and you understand what's going on.
That's right. That is absolutely right. You know, another issue that starts to make companies falter, and that's paying yourself in the early years of your company. If you don't have substantial holding power, if you're looking at your business startup, especially as a job, and if you look at I must draw, and a lot of people give that advice, and we always scratch our head and say, look, you got to put your heart and soul into the beginning years of this company to learn the knowledge to run a business successfully. So paying yourself kind of comes down on the bottom of the list, and it can be very aggravating. It can cause problems with your better half. It can do a lot of things that are very negative.
Okay, so that wouldn't necessarily be a risky thing. It's knowing going in and not having that, I guess, paycheck mentality. So I guess, if that's what I'm used to and I have that mentality of always every week, every 2 weeks, whatever it's going to be, whatever the frequency is going to be, I'm used to having that almost guaranteed paycheck, right?
That's correct.
Well, then what happens when we talk about things being risky versus not risky, one of the ways I always look at it in terms of, well, if I have a job, I have one customer. I have one paycheck. Now, if I have a company, I have multiple customers, multiple clients, multiple paychecks coming in. So from that standpoint, it's much less risky to have your own thing. We have much more control over that. If you're working for somebody else, and we've seen that, you know, I've seen it in my corporate days, my time on Wall Street, where people don't need a reason. They say, hey, we have to make some cutbacks. And hey, Jack, you're doing a fantastic job, buddy, but we got to let you go. And all of a sudden you go from having, you're fat, dumb, and happy, think everything's going great, and all of a sudden, hey, paycheck's gone. Now, I'm not saying that customers don't leave. That happens too, or that you don't fire customers, but you know, usually one customer is not going to tank the business.
That's right. Well, these big gold-plated corporations, Adam, you know, people associate that with comfort and lack of risk, but that's not the case. It just is not the case. So we have many items that we could talk about in terms of fatal mistakes. When we coach, we teach these 7 keys to success. And if you learn how to run a business, if you learn the successful characteristics of running a business, your business is not considered risky. You know when to hold them. You know when to fold them. Isn't that a song somewhere I heard? Oh, Kenny Rogers, the guy with the beard, old guy with the beard. Yeah.
That's right.
So if you don't know what you're doing, be like me being given the task of building a 100-story building here. What in the world do I know? I could do it, maybe.
I wouldn't be climbing the stairs in that building.
I wouldn't. I wouldn't either. I'd find someone else to take those first steps because I don't know what I'm doing. My God, you know, if I don't know what I'm doing, how in the world can I succeed? I might as well go down to Jack's. Hey, wait, that's my name. Jack's Casino.
Head down to the casino, right? Yeah, okay. Well, it's okay. So figure out what you're doing is a way to make sure that you can reduce the risk. And as you do that, that's very, very important. So, again, the common myth we wanted to touch on here in this segment was, again, that the fact that people will say that it's very risky to own your own business. As we talked about, whether it be that people are making some fatal mistakes that Jack talked about, things like, you know, not necessarily knowing what they're doing, not paying taxes, or worry about running out of money. So having some staying power is always very, very important from that standpoint. But if you're thinking about running a company or starting your own thing, don't let this whole idea that things are going to be risky stop you from doing that. So, because again, it's perceived risk. And if you know what you're doing, have a sense of what you're doing, you can learn about how to run a company. That's very, very important. So that's our debunking of the common myth for this week's show. So again, don't view on risk, view on the reward side. When we come back from the other side of the break, we're going to have a chance to talk about the dirty secret of the week.
Okay.
I'm Adam Sonhalter.
And I'm Jack Mancini with Maximum Value Partners.
Welcome back to Dirty Secrets of Small Business. I'm Adam Sonhalter.
And I'm Jack Mancini with Maximum Value Partners, MVP. Can't forget that. We're your small business coaches. We understand that larger companies don't have the same challenges that smaller businesses face on a daily basis. So we have made it our passion to understand what makes small businesses work.
All right. In this segment, we are going to explore the dirty secret of the week, one of our favorite segments on the show. And our dirty secret this week has to do with a topic we've talked about a lot over the time that we've known each other, Jack. There's nearly 30 years we've known each other.
Oh, boy.
And it's something that's really come to fruition here the last decade plus. And that has to do with this whole concept of how political correctness is just absolutely killing and strangling small business. And we know it's a pretty hot topic in terms of political correctness. And what we'd like to do before we get into some of these topics is to make sure that we can talk about what the definition is, so we make sure we're all on the same page here, right? So as I looked at the definition of it, it's a very simple 4-word definition. It's actually pretty paralyzing when I read it, but I'll take a read through it. Political correctness is intending not to offend.
Oh, my God. You offended me 6 times driving over here today. How in the world can you go through a day conceivably without offending somebody which our culture seems to have gotten to now, if so many people are thin-skinned.
Well, so if I'm intending, though, if my entire thinking pattern is intending not to offend, that's why I said I can be paralyzed by that. Because here I am just, I'm almost frozen wondering, everybody I'm talking to, what are they thinking?
Well, that's very true.
I can freeze up.
We're all, that's seems to be what's happening. You know, the whole political correctness movement here seems to be basically going against our basic freedom of speech and expression. It's the foundation of this country. You know, we can't solve all the human problems. We just can't. I mean, you got to suck it up in many cases here. And, you know, the focus basically should be, you know, what's best for the country, not what's best for the individual. When we coach small businesses, that's what we always do. And when we get cluttered up with confusion, we sort of stand back. Everybody stands back and says, okay, let's put in perspective some of these issues going on. And let's start by saying, what's best for the company? Well, that's no different than what's best for the country. You know, JFK said in his speech, a famous quote, do what is not best for you, do what is best for the country. And what he was saying is that sacrifice and giving for the whole, and that would be the country or the community or the situation, is going to be better for that community or organization than looking out for yourself all the time, me first.
Okay, so changing the framework is very key, what we're talking about here. So as Jack's saying, he's given some bigger perspective here in terms of the country, but as we start to then bring it down into the small business world, the same thing. Here we have, instead of everybody focusing on what's best for the company or what's best for the organization, if all of a sudden they're worrying about not offending somebody. So all of a sudden there are conversations that need to be had that are not being had. And things can become very, very confusing. You know, the words that people use nowadays in order to make sure that they're not offensive. So instead of me, if all of a sudden you're out doing something right and I want to come talk to you about it, Jack, well, I can't just have a very simple, you know, 30-second discussion to say, here's what's going on and fix it. All right? Or, I can't even address it today. I have to wait and think about it, maybe even, you know, go to some legal counsel to make sure that what I say to you is not going to be misperceived or taken the wrong way. But we know chances are communication is so difficult that by me just kind of, you know, beating around the bush, so to speak, you're not being direct with you, chances are you aren't going to get the message anyway.
Yeah, body language is so important. I mean, look at how they teach body language to express yourself and look for different movements. And if you're sitting there, you know, like a piece of dirt, how in the world am I going to read you if you're afraid to express yourself? But if you do express yourself, you're going to be politically incorrect, perhaps.
Well, what's been very difficult, and I think a big, you know, part that's helped to proliferate this has been the increase in the number of lawsuits. Okay, and so we're here in Ohio, and Ohio is an at-will state in terms of people being employed. So what that means basically is that, you know, if I'm the owner, I can choose to hire you or to fire you. Okay, I don't necessarily need a reason to fire you, but try to do that today, right?
That's right.
And try to do that today without having a folder full of reasons why, and you're going to get sued. Even if you do have that big folder of reasons why, in terms of here's what the person wasn't doing, chances are you're still pretty high that you're going to get sued. That's just the way things are. So a lot of our, you know, what we see with a lot of folks before we meet them that are small business owners is they're holding on to people too long. They aren't having those difficult conversations that need to be had to make sure that they can correct the situation.
Well, when did all this start? You know, I'm going to answer my own question because I was reading Dan Henninger in the Wall Street Journal, and he's talking, he had a good article about political correctness and what it's doing to the small business world and society in general. And, you know, this has been building since the early 1990s. And a lot of people have been intimidated into keeping their mouth shut and head down about subjects in the political and social life of the country. And I'm reading this, obviously. But in the social life of the country, that elites, whoever those friggin' elites are, stipulated as beyond discussion or dispute. Eventually, the most important social skill, he goes on, in America, became adeptness at euphemism. It isn't an abortion. It's a terminated pregnancy. And words like that and phrases like that are dancing around the directness and sometimes the brutal truth of things. You know, many small businesses are being forced to close or choose to close. The uncertainty, coming back to that word again. You know, we talked about risk. Well, you know, it's a minefield today out there with the small business. The uncertainty created by political correctness adds, you know, tremendous possible costs and disruption of a business. Just like you were talking about, mostly it seems to involve lawsuits or the threat of lawsuits. If I do something wrong, all of a sudden, there's a lawyer knocking on my door with years of possible tie-up and tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars of costs. Why in the world should I expose myself to that stuff?
It makes you want to pull your hair out, doesn't it, Jack?
Well, wait a minute. Let me try. No, I can't do that. I don't have enough hair to pull.
Neither of us do. That's all right. That's what happened to us, right? We used to have great big quaffs full of hair, and then all of a sudden, you know, running and owning a small company, all of a sudden, bam, it was all gone. And many of our clients looked the same way.
That's right. You know, you look at risk, and you look at some recent items. Convicted felons. Basically, a landlord is mandated, or will be, according to our recent spate of laws passed just by the president. We basically are required to accept anyone who comes knocking on our door with very little questioning. So if I'm a property owner and I've been skirting around and keeping my property up and making sure my tenants are happy and I'm a good neighbor, all of a sudden I'm forced to bring people in that require a second chance, what have you, and I can't refuse them, making it more and more difficult all the time to run my company. And there's a lot of people who feel very strong going the opposite way. But we're taking the focus all the time on what's best for the small business owner. And certainly they have to act within the legal process and the legalities of everything. But, boy, they're getting hamstringed more and more.
It's very tough, as you point out, Jack. There are all kinds of laws that are out there and more that are coming. And so I think the takeaway from today's segment here in terms of our dirty secret of the week on political correctness and how it's killing small business, that if you're a small business owner, and if you work for a small business, try to keep that phrase Jack mentioned earlier about what's best for the organization clearly in mind. And if we're asking those kind of questions, we're asking that instead of how am I not going to offend somebody, we're going to have much better discussions and much better progress in terms of making sure that we're going to be successful. So,
yeah, you're absolutely right.
All right. So as we come into our next segment, we're going to be hearing about what's on Jack's mind and what we call our How Come section. And we're going to be having a good discussion there. So I'm Adam Sunhalter.
And I'm Jack Mancini with Maximum Value Partners. We'll be there 24/7 to coach you and chart your path to business success.
Stay tuned for more Dirty Secrets of Small Business on Integrity Radio, WINT 1330 AM, and online at WINTradio.com.
WINT Local News.
Geauga Trumbull Solid Waste Management District's seasonal household hazardous waste recycling facility will open for the season on Wednesday. Located at 5138 Enterprise Boulevard in Warren, the facility will be open from 10 to 6 every Wednesday through October 26th. The facility is also open on the first Saturday of May, June, August, and October from 9 to noon. The facility is open to residents of Geauga and Trumbull counties to properly dispose of hazardous material that cannot go out with the regular trash. The facility also accepts microwaves for free and monitors and televisions for a fee. The release stated that there is an extensive list of acceptable material and a map to the facility located at startrecycling.com. Another Menor McDonald's is getting a modern makeover. The location at 8380 Broadmoor Road, Route 306 just north of I-90, was reduced to rubble this week to make way for the new version. Kirtland's Ali Mandavi owns 7 McDonald's locations in Lake County. He said the 45 displaced employees can keep their jobs and work at one of the other sites during construction, and he anticipates opening the new restaurant by late July or early August. Menor Economic and Community Development Director Ronald Traub said the changes are an improvement in multiple ways. The city has invested in this area in recent years via a joint resurfacing project. The city has invested in this area in recent years via a joint resurfacing project with neighboring communities and installing a center island on Route 306 with landscaping and decorative street lighting. Your local news headlines have been presented as a community news partnership between News-Herald.com and Integrity Radio, WINT.
Guess whose birthday it is today?
It's time to hear which WINT listeners in the Birthday Club are celebrating their birthdays today.
May 2nd, birthday wishes go out to James Amundson, Tia Brown, A.C. Burkhammer, John Schlebeck, Becca Dowd, David Fennell, Chris Firth, Joe Fisher, Matthew Granito, Jake Hofel, Ken Jalen, Joe Kubasha, Debbie Langsdale, Luke Mozek, Monica Munoz, Sandy Nemeth, Gene Rodeheaver, Shelley Strausser, Nick Thornhill, Edward Zell.
And the birthday person is, drumroll please,
Julio Pelsmaher of Willoughby. Congratulations, Julio. You've won a $5 gift certificate from the Great Harvest Bread Company in Menor. A happy birthday premium chocolate bar from Brant's Candies in Willoughby. A free Sunday cake or 6 Busta bars from the Willoughby Dairy Queen. And finally, Julio, you've won a fresh rose or $5 off any floral purchase from Plant Magic Florist and Irish Crossroads Gift Shop in Willoughby.
You too can join the WINT Birthday Club.
One, two, happy birthday to you.
Just visit WINTradio.com.
Welcome back to Dirty Secrets of Small Business. I'm Adam Sonhalter.
And I'm Jack Mancini with Maximum Value Partners, MVP. We're your small business coaches. We understand that larger companies don't have the same challenges that smaller businesses face on a daily basis. So we've made it our passion to understand what makes small businesses work.
Well, we just finished going through political correctness, and I'll give a quick shout out to our engineer, Alan, talked about, hey, you know, if you're bald, you're not really bald. He said you're really follically challenged. And so Jack and I both resemble that remark. So we appreciate that.
We certainly do, Alan. He's very observant.
All right, so in this segment, we're going to have what we're affectionately referring to as the how come section, with a question mark at the end of that. And so the idea here is we're going to start a segment with a question of how come. This is also the part of the segment where we invite you to also participate as well. If you have a how come question about your business, you can always reach us here at 440-946-9468. That's 440-946-WINT. So, but today we're going to start with Jack in the how come section. So, Jack, what's on your mind today?
How come, Adam? How come Congress doesn't seem to really debate anymore? There's a lot of yapping back and forth that seems arguing. One guy on one side of the aisle could find a cure for cancer, and the people on the other side of the aisle would demonize it almost instantly. There's no what's best for the country kind of, at least that's the perception, that type of discussion. Multi-thousand page bills passed without knowing what's in them. That's not a perception, that's reality. Things like that, things that really are issues. What are we paying our representatives for if not to go and take the issues of the country, the very difficult tasks, try to prioritize them, and talk about them in a meaningful way to come up with solutions that are best for everybody?
Oh, wait, is a filibuster, does that count as a debate? Or is that something different?
Boy, that's the filibuster is somebody talking endlessly here to stop whatever that political process is for a while to get to get an advantage here that they otherwise wouldn't have.
Okay, so
not debate, that's for sure.
All right, well, I see a lot of that, and you know, you see news clips and things going on where you see those kind of things happen. Maybe there's some sort of a, I don't know if I'd call it a debate, it's more kind of zingers back and forth if you see people being interviewed on TV, right? I mean, you'll see it. But you're talking about actually on the floors of Congress or in the Senate.
That's correct.
Okay.
Where they take an issue and they talk about it. And I'm sure it's done to some degree, but the perception is a lot of arguing, a lot of positioning, and not really a true fact-finding, intelligent discussion about what's best for the country or issue at hand if we're talking about a different level of government.
Okay.
And I was just reading again in the Wall Street Journal where our president readies a wave of new rules, plan moves across labor and health and finance and environment, issues ranging from overtime pay, food labeling, landlord renting to convicted felons, et cetera, et cetera. And it just isn't our current president. It was the current or the president before him for 8 years. These guys can't get things through the House and the Senate, and they being the president, will write executive order and push these things out by the hundreds. And they affect small business. That's our focus, small business. So my how come is, why don't they really debate anymore?
That's a great question. Well, let's try to bring it down to your point here, Jack. Let's bring it down to, okay, how does this now impact what we're talking about here on our show as it relates to small business? So the laws being passed, that's a big deal. Absolutely. Too many laws is not a good thing. Because, again, it's almost to the point now where you can go through your day where you're going to be breaking a law almost guaranteed, even if you don't know about it. There's so many laws that are out there, chances are you're probably going to break one.
Between collective or between political correctness and laws on the books that we're breaking, when do you move if you really want to be a good citizen thinking and doing your best? How in the world can you keep up?
Right.
Very difficult. You know, I'm a free market guy, and I realize we need some government. There's no question at all about that. But these undebated mandates that are just out to get you and push through something where we don't have it vetted properly, you know, that's going to just create less and less small businesses. And small businesses are the job creators and the fabric of communities. And the last thing in this country that you want to do is hurt them. Yet all this nonsense, and I call it total nonsense, is hurting small businesses.
All right, so we have a couple things you touched on there. I think one is that the actual number of companies being able to start up, or the idea of, hey, if I want to go out tomorrow and I have an epiphany, I want to go start a company. I think what I'm hearing you say, Jack, is that it's becoming much more onerous to try to go do that because there are so many restrictions and things in place by a lot of these laws that are being passed that make it almost such a steep hill to climb. I won't even start, maybe, perhaps.
And that's
so,
right.
Okay.
Let me give you, there's a representative, a Republican from South Carolina. The guy's name is Tom Rice. He was saying we're drowning these small businesses in regulation. Between the Affordable Care Act, between the limit to access to capital under Dodd-Frank, all these things are significant. They're constraining small businesses. In the past 5 years, more small businesses, according to Rice, have closed than have opened. And this is a result of the huge regulatory overreach, according to him. We keep creating more and more government at all levels, adding time and cost to getting business done. And we can speak, we being Adam and I, with our personal involvement with many small businesses after a career in big corporations. And we see this, and we coach hundreds of businesses, and we see it all the time. It's squeezing the lifeblood out of our economy.
Well, let me bring some perspective to that, too. Why is this so important? You know, when we talk about small business, that's, you know, our focus is typically anywhere from 1 to 25 employees. If you look around, there, you know, there's some stats that we found out there in terms of small business trend to talk about the number of companies that exist here in the United States. It's about 23, 24 million, okay? Now, the vast majority of those are just kind of one person, but about 6 million of them are actually have employees.
How big are those companies that you're talking about?
Well, again, so the vast majority of the 23 million are just one employee, okay, person, but about 6 million have employees. Now, the ones that actually have employees, the ones that have 20 or less employees, it's about 87%. So the vast majority, if there's a company with an employee, chances are, you know, it's true for most of our listening audience here, Jack. Either they are employed by or they own a small company.
That's true. By
the sheer numbers that are out there. So when it comes to, you know, why this is a big issue in terms of them being strangled, and whether it be the ones, you know, as I mentioned before, that are maybe afraid to start up, and as you're touching on, okay, well, the ones that are already there, here's how they're being, there's been more burdens being put on them to run a company. There's additional fees. Each time there's a law gets passed to make sure that you're in compliance with stuff, you got to make sure you're checking things out. So it's adding more administrative burden to these companies that don't usually have the ability to be able to add folks. They small companies don't have a legal team on staff of people to kind of make sure that they're within, you know, different regulations, or that they aren't breaking laws.
I don't think many people. Again, I'm talking impression. Certainly my impression. I don't think many small business owners or many politicians who pass these laws and bureaucrats who pass these laws truly understand that impact. And it's very incremental. It kind of creeps up over the years. All of a sudden, there's dramatic changes from a decade ago, or certainly 2 decades ago. And, you know, the simple solution to me, I like advocates that say reduce the size of government at all levels. And thus you reduce taxes. Government doesn't create jobs. All they do is take money from somebody else and basically give it to a government agency or an employee. They don't create jobs through a free market system. So, you know, the simple solution is to reduce government at all levels. And, you know, you can do that. You can do that just like a business, any organization. It spends money and it projects money. And that's how you do it. That's the simple solution.
All right. So that's you're looking at each individual to kind of help try to do that, because, again, unless you're an elected official, you can't make that decision yourself. It's more about trying to figure out who gets elected.
Well, let me give you a simple simple solution is what I gave you, but how could you start to enact something like that?
All right.
Well, we elect officials to be doing that job, and it doesn't seem like they're doing it well. Crazy rules about budgeting, crazy rules about running an organization. There's little or no accountability. Decisions can't be made easily. Let's start with something small, a small suburban or a very small city. Create a group of volunteer experts, people who are skilled at, picture a group like this. Picture a group who's skilled, somebody is skilled at PR, accounting, basically IT, engineering, law. Picture them coming together with the idea that they're going to examine the latest budget of that little community. And they're going to prioritize cuts, and they're going to project, make projects to enhance operations, and make high visible proposals to implement change. They can do this stuff. In other words, a group like that could make these decisions and then present it to somebody, being the council or the whatever the body is, and basically hold that group accountable as to why they cannot implement these changes. That's how it should run. That's how successful small businesses run. And successful small government bodies can do the same thing. I'm absolutely positive of it, except for that word politics, which almost becomes a little poison here. It doesn't have good applicability, but anyway.
Well, that could be a good idea, having the volunteers try to do that. I think maybe your idea of starting small, Jack, is a great idea for a solution here as we have to wrap up this segment. But to keep it small, because you can keep your arms around it. So maybe even, to your point, Jack, maybe focusing on a percentage. Let's try to decrease that budget by a certain percentage.
That's what you could do. Okay. Very small. You start the ball rolling the other way.
Yeah,
that's what we'd like to do.
And keeping my percentages versus dollars, because the dollars can get pretty big pretty quickly, and those can be overwhelming. But keep it, if we can cut back 1%, 2%, something like that to get things kind of started, I think is a great idea. All right. So in our next segment, we're going to be coming back. We're going to be sharing a small business success story from one of our clients, and it's in terms of how they have helped to grow more than double here in the last 3 years. So stick by for that. I'm Adam Sonhalter.
And I'm Jack Mancini with Maximum Value Partners.
Welcome back to Dirty Secrets of Small Business. I'm Adam Sonhalter.
And I'm Jack Mancini with Maximum Value Partners, MVP. Don't forget that. We're your small business coaches. We understand that larger companies don't have the same challenges that smaller businesses face on a daily basis. So we have made it our passion to understand what makes small businesses work.
Our segment here today, we're going to talk on a small business success story. And just to remind you what we're talking about when we mentioned small business, because I think it's a helpful perspective. If you mention that term small, people often have different things in mind. And I know from my Wall Street days when we talked about micro-cap stocks, micro being very small, it was if they were worth $500 million or less. That's a pretty big number, isn't it, Jack?
That's so far from what we deal with, where there's millions and millions of what we deal with, but absolutely.
Right. And our friends over at the Small Business Administration, the SBA, as it's known, talks about small businesses being anywhere from 500 employees on down. So they're getting a little closer, $500 million. 500, okay, so we're getting closer. But
what do we usually deal with?
We come all the way down to the 1 to 25 employees.
To 25 from 500 down. Right.
As we mentioned before, that's about not quite 90% of all the companies that are here that have employees here in the U.S. are that kind of size of companies. And so those are what we spend time with. And I want to share a story today about one of our clients, and it relates to, As we talk about this segment, we'll talk about our seven keys here as well in terms of how we kind of coach our clients. And for this client, it happened to be with the organization. That was it was the organization plan, which is our fourth key of the seven keys. And it comes down to getting the organization right.
All right, let me just clarify just for a second, Adam. The seven keys that you're talking about, those are the seven keys to success. And they've been pulled together. We've been together for over 13 years coaching these small businesses, 1 to 25 size organizations. And we've developed from our big corporate days, which you can see on our website, our backgrounds, From our big corporate days and years of experience with small businesses, we've developed 7 points that if they are mastered, if you as a small business owner are coachable and you stay with this, you will succeed. And our success is defined as growing sustainable profits. I just wanted to put that. So there's 7 distinct areas of growth that will lead to success.
That's right. And so whenever we have a business owner talking about what's going on, our framework for Jack and I will go to those 7 keys. And so we're going to hear them through those 7 keys when they're trying to explain what the opportunity is, what the challenge is, what's going on. And we'll see the area that has to have the most work, you know, is where this tend to go. And so this particular client has been a client for ours now for about 3.5 years. And we'd met him through another client of ours about 5 years ago. And after we'd met him, it took him almost 1.5 years to come talk to us. And, he was ready. You know, one of our other keys is leadership. We use a tool called DISC, D-I-S-C, which is a behavior assessment.
DISC.
DISC,
is that what might go on in one of your back?
Yeah, that could be it, too. But this is, you know, when it comes to our world, our DISC. Yeah, he had a certain DISC style in terms of being a little slow to make decisions and, you know, wanting to do things a certain way. So it took him about 18 months to call. And when he did call, he had this phrase in mind. He said, hey, well, first of all, he asked if we were still taking clients on. And I said, of course we are, if they're the right kind of clients. That's always key for us. I said, good question, though. And then he said, look, I cannot in good conscience take on more work with the current crew that I have.
I remember that.
And so most people say, wow, that's a fantastic problem. More work than I know what to do with. Oh, okay, well, it's a good problem unless you're there. And so immediately for us, it came to the fact that he has an organizational issue. I don't have confidence that what I'm promising to the market out there, that our firm can deliver that. So, okay, so he has to have the right people in place. So as we got started with this client, and this is one of the things that Jack and I have learned as part of our coaching, is that this is true for our clients, but it's also true for Jack and I. We've learned that if you're talking about somebody a lot, and so in the case of our coaching, is when they come to our meetings, if the same person keeps getting brought up, and they aren't being brought up in a positive light, like, hey, so-and-so is doing a great job over here or there. It's more that they're complaining about problems that this person's having. We'll stop and say, like, do you realize in the last, you know, 6 meetings we've had, you've brought up Bob's name, you know, 18 different times. You've never said a good word about Bob.
Yeah, so that's a signal that something's amiss here, and you're the owner of the company. So we can look around the room, and after we get done looking, we put our eyes right back on you. So why are you dealing with this employee time after time after time? It's causing frustration, and you aren't really getting what you want, and you certainly aren't moving to maximum profitability here.
It becomes a tough decision, and I'll quote JFK again here today. He mentioned the fact that, hey, if the decision was easy, it would have been made before it got to me. Okay, so we aren't dealing with the president of the United States here. We're dealing with the president and owners of companies, and these decisions are very tough too, especially in this case, because the person that was being brought up and talked about a lot is somebody who had been with the company for a long time. As a matter of fact, been with that company since the beginning. And what often happens is that, you know, when we have clients that have people that are there from the start, is that person often might plateau at some point while the company itself continues to grow. And that was the case here, where that employee had kind of had the certain ways of doing things and had plateaued years ago. And what was coming now is, in terms of the growth of the organization, they're starting to feel some of the growing pains of that, where the way that person was doing things was creating problems.
So the big challenge then is, what do you do?
Right.
How do you do it?
And so we said, look, this is your company. We talked about, you know, the fact that we need to probably replace this person. They tried to retrain them. That's not going to work. And so they had to make a change. So it took them about 1 year. Again, going back to his DISC style, being very, you know, a little slower to make decisions, wants to make sure he's right about it. It took about 1 year, and he finally made the change. But this, you know, again, this was for the first employee. He had about 7 employees when we started with him. And he made that first change. And it was tough, and of course, it is often the case, he finds other things that are going on once he makes that change. Over the course of the next year, he changed almost everybody. Everybody except for one employee.
Absolutely amazing. Well, not too amazing to us.
Right. But once he was able to get through that first one, he started to kind of find his rhythm a little bit and realize that, hey, I need good people here. And so through all this, he still grew 30% that first year, in spite of all that, and grew again. He's on the pace now, you know, at the end of this year to be more than double from where we had him. Now, he's doubling his revenue and his profits, but he's only increased his staff from 7 employees to 10. That's a pretty good ratio, right?
Yes, it is. It's an excellent one.
So he's had some good success with that. And it's not done, you know, but by no means is it done, but he's feeling much better about it. And one of the keys for him, too, is finding ways to go find those good people is always a key, knowing that you can make that change. And getting through the very tough, you know, situation to do that. So
that can be an expensive process too, can it? And a lot of people have to gulp real big and sign a big check to get the right people sometimes. So they look at that as being an obstacle, and they don't take it. So they continue to complain about marginal people or less than good people.
Yeah, taking into perspective what it costs to have that person on board is a big deal, right? Or bringing the wrong people in is a big deal as well. So. One of the things he did, which I think you're alluding to, Jack, is he went out and found a search firm to help him out as well. And so that was a big part of helping him find those good people, which was very important. But he's got that team in place now, and we have not heard him saying, you know, I don't have people to get the work done. He's not focused a lot on making sure that he can find more business to bring in to help with those people. So if you're a business owner and you're finding yourself talking about somebody a lot, make sure that you make that change. Okay, make sure you make that change quickly. You'll be glad you did, because you'll wonder why it took you so long. So I want to thank you for joining us on this week's edition of Dirty Secrets of Small Business. We invite you to tune in every Monday at noon. If you have any questions before our next show, you can email them to radio@maximumvp.com, post at facebook.com/maximumvp, or call us at 877-849-0670. That's 877-849-0670.
At Maximum Value Partners, we work hard, really, to build long-term relationships and become not only your valued advisors, but also your trusted friends. If you're looking to be successful, knowledgeable, a business owner who has those characteristics to take your company anywhere you want to go, we can help.
I'll keep your eyes on the road, your hand upon the wheel. Keep your eyes on the road, your hand upon the wheel.